Hi guys, welcome to the Neighborhood Podcast and you're listening to Fatiha. So I know I disappointed with my Sunday arrangement. I am truly sorry. It has been a roller coaster of trying to find the right time, the right space with, you know, the least background noise, you know, trying to find the perfect topic to talk about, find the motivation. Guys, adulthood is a scam. It is, man, because from all of that. But thank God I am here to do this finally. I am really, really excited about this. And yeah, before I forget, I would like to apologize to my Ghanaian listeners about my Kumasi reference in my previous episode. I am truly sorry, guys. It's all love, guys. It's all love. Yeah, and a special shout out to my mom. She also listened to my previous episode. Continue to share in your WhatsApp groups, mom. Thank you. So much of our rhetoric lately has been about pointing fingers at other people, and this is something I am guilty of as well. So I thought, why not talk about something that would, you know, be introspective, that would force us to reflect, you know, on a personal level. So I would be talking about some social psychological terminologies that we can relate with on a personal level. So I would mention about roughly four. Yeah, and I would give, you know, day-to-day examples that I know a lot of people can relate with, I'm sure, because when I give those examples, like the analogies, it would resonate with most people. That's something I know about. Yeah, that's something I'm pretty sure about. So yeah, to start with, I think the first one I'm going to talk about is the actor and observer effect, or asymmetry. So with this one, let me give this example. It's like when your Nigerian mom, yes, I feel like I need to say Nigerian because I don't know whether it's something, but maybe I should just say, okay, when your mom, so you guys will tell me if it's just restricted to Nigerian moms now, but yeah, when your mom breaks a plate or a glass cup, and then she goes, get the packer, get the, you know, broom, and come and pack this up. Compared to when you break a glass cup, or let's say a plate, and then she goes, it's because you're pressing your phone. It's because you're doing this. That's why you broke the glass cup. I feel like that's the perfect example to explain this. So with the actor-observer asymmetry, it is like when you do something and then it has a negative outcome, you're more likely to, you know, find an excuse, like think up something why so and so happened, but you don't extend that same grace, you know, to other people when it happens and then there's a negative outcome. So if you're guilty of this, you know yourself already, so you should, you know, you should aspire to change some of these things about you, basically. Yeah, so the next one I'm going to be talking about is the apparent conditioning. So this one also has other side, that's the classical conditioning with Ivan Pavlov and the dog experiments. You can go read up more on that if you're curious, but the one I want to talk about is the operant conditioning. So with the operant conditioning, it's like you're either rewarded or reinforced, like when you perform a particular action. So how this relates to us personally is, as human beings, most of us are a product of our conditioning. You see, as a girl, you are conditioned certain way till you grow up, and then that's how you are. So I know a woman who has two daughters and a son, and you know, the son comes around once in a while, the daughters come, and then they're expected to clean, cook, and all of that. Imagine a son growing up in that same environment and seeing this. I feel the son is likely to grow up to think, this is okay, I'm just expected to do the barest minimum and I would be praised and I will, you know, be rewarded. Because with operant conditioning now, it's either you're rewarded or you are punished. So there's a way you are reinforced to continue an action, basically. Like, you continue an action, or you're likely to continue an action based on whether you are reinforced, like with rewards or punishment. So that's just how that works. So if, as a mother, you continue to entrench this narrative, like with, you know, bringing up your child, in as much as we like to say, oh, men are scum, men are this, they're that, I think men are also a product of, like, they're a victim, yeah, of their own upbringing. Because as a son, if all my life, you know, when I finish eating, somebody comes to clean up after me, take my plate to the kitchen, and then one day somebody tells me, oh, this is not okay, this is not fine, like, you're not supposed to do this, I would, you know, my instinct would, I would first go defensive naturally, like, it's just natural. So in as much as we like to point fingers, I think we as nurturers, as, you know, the people who are the oppressed, basically, in as much as we have that power to change things, we should do our best to make sure that we're changing it and we're reducing, you know, the narrative of the oppression, basically. I hope that really makes sense and I was able to get my point across. I'm just trying to say, in as much as women are behind, like, they're the ones suffering and the oppressed, we also have a way we enable patriarchy. Yes. So as a woman, I feel it is also our obligation to dismantle the patriarchy in our own little ways. Yes, that's just the point. So the next one I'm going to be talking about is the naive realism. So this one is something that hits me personally. Yes. With this one, it's like you think you're the only one that is objective and everybody is like irrational, uninformed, or wait for it, stupid. So it's something I had to reflect upon with regards to my feminism. You know how when you get to a certain point, you think, oh, your own definition of feminism is like the only right one and every other one is like wrong, rubbish, nonsense. So this forced me to actually go back to ask myself, like, I really need to, you know, be more receptive to other people's opinions, their definition of feminism, that only my own cannot be the objective one. Yes, because with this one, it's like you think you're the only objective one. And the sad thing is, as human beings, we are biased. Like, it's inherent in us that we have to be biased. So you think, oh, you're not biased, like, all your opinions are objective, but it's untrue. Like, no matter how objective you are, you would be subjective in a way. Like, there's no how, because it's either you have a family or something, you know, we all have things that make us biased. So this for me was just a personal thing. Like, it feels personal. Like, it made me go back to ask myself, like, I need to be receptive, I need to listen more to other people's definition of feminism. It might not be feminism for you, it might be something else for you, you know, like, but for me, that is what it is. So it made me go back and ask myself, okay, you really have to, you know, be more accepting, you know, and that people have other opinions does not mean they are defective or defensive in a way. Yeah. So to the other one I'm going to be talking about, this one is the false consensus effect. So with this one, it's like, you know the way Lagos people think there is no world or any other place apart from Lagos. Or when it goes to Ghana now, people in Accra think Ghana begins and ends with Accra. So this one, it's like, people think because a group of them now, they think because they seem to be the center now, or because, you know, the way Lagos is like the center of business and all of that, so the world ends and begins with them, like it revolves around them. So with this one now, probably in your family now, you use cutlery to eat and all of that, and then you go to somebody else's family and then you see them eating with their hands, and then before you know, what comes to your mind is they're uncultured, you know, like, who are these people, who are these animals? Yeah. So with this one, I feel like it starts from a very nuclear or small group, and then before you know it, it blows out of proportion, and then it leads to overconfidence, and then, like, you know, people having this very over bloated self-esteem. You know how from very little your mother tells you, oh, you can do anything, you can fly a plane, blah 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 blah. Yeah, that's just how this works. And I feel like for me, again, it happened. I realized this when I traveled, you know, to Ibadan, and even before Ibadan, but Ibadan was for me like the awakening. Yes, it was the awakening, because you think life starts and ends in Lagos, and then you go somewhere else and they are living fine, they are good. Yes, like they are good, and they are educated. You think, oh, only people in Lagos are educated. No, wrong. Like, a lot of things that, you know, people are doing fine, basically, in other parts of the world, or like in other schools. You know how we go around thinking, oh, our schools are the best, our schools are the kiriko. It's fine, you know, to have that, what's it called, bond, or like feeling about your school, like that positive feeling, but at the same time you should know, like, the world doesn't revolve around your school or like your family, your country. Yes, because as Nigerians we have that as well, where we think, oh, other African countries are like, and everything starts and ends with Nigeria. Coming from Nigerians that, I'm sorry to say guys, are not well traveled. I'm serious. There are Nigerians that, I feel like compared to other African countries, Nigerians are not really well traveled. And this is something I feel like, I'm sure there's going to be a research to back this thing I'm saying up. I know, but I don't have it now. But I think there will be. Yeah, so that's just what the false consensus effect is all about. Then the stark opposite of that, that I will be ending with, is the pluralistic ignorance. So with this one now, it's like it starts from a smaller group and then it goes upwards. I don't know if you guys, so let me give you guys an example. You know, you're in a lecture room and the lecturer is talking, yeah, and then you think that everybody in the class understands what the lecturer is saying. On the contrary, nobody understands, but you as one person, you're thinking, why would I be that one person that will raise my hand up to ask a question when everybody understands? Whereas it's the stark opposite. And in smaller groups now, it's just like when you're in your peer group and then somebody is bullying somebody else, but you're there watching because you're thinking, oh, everybody is fine with this. But on the contrary, nobody is fine with that. But nobody is willing to be that person that would go and stand up and be like, oh, what you're doing is wrong. Yes, I feel like it's what has trickled down. Like, the trickle-down effect is what we have seen in rape, you know, amongst guys, and how they cannot call their guys to order. So they all know within themselves that, oh, what our guy is doing is wrong. But they're not willing to be that one person that would go and stand up and be like, oh, what you're doing is wrong. It was like in what I noticed in the video I was watching about this dismissed soldier, and then he was physically assaulting this police woman, and it was sad that nobody could go there to separate the fight. Like, people were basically watching, and this was something I also read up on. It leads to the bystander effect. So you're thinking, oh, somebody is going to go there and separate them. But you're all thinking in your head, but nobody is acting upon it. Yes, that's it. Like, nobody is acting upon it. You're just staring, standing and waiting for somebody to go act, but you're not doing anything. So basically, it took about like a couple of minutes before somebody went and then separated the fight. So I think the harmful effect of the pluralistic ignorance, it leads to the bystander effect. So we are all thinking in our head, that this person is going to go do this, this person is going to go do this, when we can be that one person who would go and do it, but we're waiting for one person to go and do it. It's just with our government again, where we're all waiting for one person to be the Messiah, one person, when we can do things in our own little way, you know, to bring forth the change that we want. But we're all waiting for one person to do this, one person to do that, and before we know it, nothing is ever going to change. Like, nothing is ever going to change if we continue to do this. Like, nothing is ever going to change. So one takeaway I think we should, as in take from all of this, is that with the pluralistic ignorance, you're thinking this is not right, but because you think the bigger group thinks it is right, you don't want to be that one person that would come out and say, oh, this is not cool, this is not okay. Like, you don't want to be that one person. So sometimes I feel like we should strive to be that one person, you know, like you should be that one person. It's really be something that doesn't sit right with your morals, your values, what you basically, things you define yourself with, your principles. So you should aspire to be that one person. So summarily, I started out with the actor observer. So we should basically give people the benefit of the doubt with our conditioning, you know, as women, mothers, as fathers, as parents, wards, guardians. You should aspire to learn how to parent. Some people think they know how to parent, but it takes learning. Some of these things, it takes conscious learning. Like, some of these things take conscious learning. And the thing is, you get to learn on the job. It's not something you can say, oh, you can prepare all your life for it, but you will still not be ready. That's just what parenting is. And you continue to learn on the job, just like with marriage. Learning on the job, even with parenting, that is how it is. So then with the false consensus effect, you know, it's like people think the world revolves around them, starts and begins, and sadly, it doesn't. It doesn't. So to wrap up, I think we should be more accepting of other opinions. We should be more, you know, we should listen more. We should listen more. We should be more, what's it called now? Critical, yes. Critical of our own ideals and ideas and our values. Because it's just like what I was reading about how we tend to critically examine ideas we do not like compared to the ideas that we do like. It is a fact. So if, for example, you are a big believer of religion, like, are you willing to critically examine some of the, you know, known facts of your religion? Will you do that, like, critically? That's something you should ask yourself. So thank you guys very much for listening. It's been fun doing this, and I'm really grateful, man. And honestly, like, I'm really, really grateful for you guys, like, with the comments, the engagement. It's humbling. Yes, it's humbling. So thank you very much, guys. Bye bye. Have a great weekend.